I lost my best friend when I was 15 years old. You know, he had cancer and I really thought he would make it through, to be honest. Like, you know, you grew up, especially as a kid, you know, you're 15 years old, you don't really understand death. It was kind of a shift because at 15 years old, and I was talking a lot of the United States with him, you know, he was watching Friends with me, like, you know, it was kind of our little tradition, especially when he was going through, you know, tough time, to be at home. And so part of this, I was like, wow, someone that I love so much is not here anymore. And he wanted to go to New York and he wanted to go to the United States. And so you feel like, and I still feel like that sometimes where like, I need to live this life for him. I need to, you know, go through these things that he could and never have done because he died at 15 years old. It kind of helped me through my grief, to be honest, because I was energized by being like, okay, I want to do these dreams. And there's someone that could not do it. You know, he could not make them happen. So I need to do it for him. I need to, it has to be kind of a way that, you know, it would live through me.
This was actually the start of my guest Mathilde's dream to eventually move to America and create the life that she desired. It's a story about making life happen, taking chances, and it's also about honoring those that you love. It's another inspiring episode with a great human, and I know that you will enjoy this episode. So, without further ado, here's the beginning of season two. I'm Matt Gilhooly, and this is The Life Shift, candid conversations about the pivotal moments that have changed lives forever. Hello, my friends. Welcome to the Life Shift podcast. This is an exciting one, guys. It may sound a little bit different because this is technically the first recording for season two of the Life Shift podcast. And I am just so grateful that all of you have been listening. We're at, this would be episode 33 now. So as you know, I'm way ahead of recording. I've said it a couple times. So we're recording this on a very special day, way ahead of release. So when you're listening to this, it's already happened a long time ago. But today is September 1st, 2022. And it's actually the anniversary of my first major life shift. It's really kind of the birth of this podcast. 33 years ago today, my mom died in an accident, and that shifted my life completely. Like, I am pretty sure 100% a different person than I would have been had she survived. So I think it's really special, and it marks the first episode of season two. So I am here with my friend Mathilde. We're going to get into her story and do our normal stuff, but I just wanted to just say thank you and let you know why this may sound a little different and just share a little bit about the impetus of this podcast. So I have my mom to thank. And funny enough, I just thought about this. I launched the podcast the week of her birthday. So wow. It's kind of like this little special place. So I appreciate you being here. But Mathilde, thank you for being a part of this.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Matt. I'm so excited.
You are joining us where you're in New York City, and we'll get to why you're there at some point in our conversation, right? Is that where you are?
I'm in South Carolina, but I was in New York yesterday. Yeah, it's really hard to keep up with me. I know that. My clients always say that. It's like, where are you right now?
To be fair, I just went on a TikTok rabbit hole and watched all of Mathilde's TikTok. I think I watched all of them.
Oh my God.
You're welcome.
Yeah, you're welcome. Well, at least I got one extra view for each of them. So that's pretty good.
Exactly. So we met on LinkedIn, and I've been really enjoying LinkedIn lately. I've just really started the last couple months really engaging. Have you been around a while on the LinkedIn space?
Yeah, I was going to say the same. I just love LinkedIn. So I've been there since March, end of March, and writing really every day and connecting with a lot of people. And now I meet like 4 to 5 people every week from LinkedIn, which is awesome. Like, it's just so great. So yeah, just like you, I've been really enjoying LinkedIn and meet really awesome people. You know, you're an example.
Don't judge it yet. You don't know. So we met, like, you know, on this kind of a social activity that LinkedIn likes to have on Saturdays. And, you know, you just kind of introduce yourself and connect. And funny story is that Matilda and I were in the same place 10 days apart on the other side of the world.
Mm-hmm. I know, it's crazy. So we were at the sanctuary, elephant sanctuary in Chiang Mai, which is right outside of Chiang Mai in Thailand. And you were there, I don't remember the dates exactly, but I think you were like May 14 or something like that. I was there like May 24. And it was like 10 days apart. And so I remember when we were on LinkedIn, you sent the picture in the comments. And I was like, oh my God, but I've been there. And then you said the year and the date. And I was like, oh, that's crazy. So yeah, that was quite a coincidence.
I just remember you're like, oh yeah, and we wore these strange outfits and
yeah,
we got in the mud with the elephants and
yes.
fed them all sorts of stuff. That was a great experience.
It was beautiful.
Mm-hmm. I went to Thailand with my episode 4 guest, Adrian.
Oh.
And funny story is that we took a class in college together maybe 15 years prior to that. And we hadn't seen each other since. And we weren't really friends. Like,
that's incredible.
Good friends. And yeah. I needed someone to go on a trip with. And so I put it on Facebook. And she's like, sure. I was like, you want to go for 2 weeks? Sure, let's go. And so we went over to the other side
amazing.
Of the world.
Yeah. That's another life shift, no?
it was amazing. And I'm glad you got that experience, because I'll never forget going and hanging out with the elephants and just checking out Chiang Mai. And we went to Phuket and we went to Bangkok as well.
Yeah, I can't wait to go back. I'm you know, I can't wait to get there.
To get on that 30-hour flight over.
No.
All right, so let's get into you. So you have a story that is super inspiring. I think it's where a lot of people in 2022 would like to emulate in some sort, or try to create a life like you've created for yourself. And naturally, you know, our lives take these directions based on decisions we make or shifts, right? Like my mom dying, my life totally went in a different direction. And so before we talk about like your major shift, maybe you can give us an idea of what life was like before that, kind of paint the picture of who you were.
Yeah, and also the life in France, because I feel like a lot of people that listen to that, you know, you don't really realize what life in France is. It's very different,
right.
You know, than US. So yeah, I guess, you know, I have great parents. I grew up in a family very much loved, you know, so I don't have to say anything about this. I don't have any trauma or anything like this. But one weird thing about me growing up in France was I was really attached to the United States. It's very strange. But I don't know if it's the culture, the fact that we have so much access to the American culture by movies and TV shows. And trust me, it's like everywhere in France. People are like, oh my God, it's like, oh, you guys celebrate Thanksgiving. Like, we don't know what it is. You know, it's like everyone is so like amazed by the US, you know. So I guess part of me was also, you know, kind of, you know, in this whole fanatic, you know, of the US for sure. But there was something else. And so when I was 11 years old, I was starting to talk to my parents and like, oh yeah, I'll probably move to the United States. My dad's like, where did that come from?
Yeah, you're 11.
Like, exactly. You're 11. You don't know anything about life. But it was really funny, because my whole teenage years was about, you know, thinking about the United States, a lot about New York. I was watching Friends. You know, I was like a huge fan of the show. And, you know, it's this whole kind of atmosphere that I grew up in. So, you know, very, very, I would say, you know, life that was very peaceful, I would say. But the one thing that I think really played a part in what happened after was that I lost my best friend when I was 15 years old. My best friend was, you know, he had cancer, and I really thought he would make it through, to be honest. Like, you know, you grew up, especially as a kid, you know, you're 15 years old, you don't really understand death. Part of me was just like, well, you'll be there forever. It's just you're sick. And so when he died, it was like, it was one of my shift actually in my life.
Yeah, you didn't even tell me about this one.
Yeah, I might have mentioned it. It was also on my LinkedIn, but It was kind of a shift because at 15 years old, and I was talking a lot of the United States with him, you know, he was watching Friends with me, like, you know, it was kind of our little tradition, especially when he was going through, you know, tough time to be at home. And so part of this, I was like, wow, someone that I love so much is not here anymore. And he wanted to go to New York and he wanted to go to the United States. And so you feel like, and I still feel like that sometimes where like, I need to live this life for him. I need to, you know, go through these things that he could and never have done because he died at 15 years old. It kind of helped me through my grief, to be honest, because I was energized by being like, okay, I want to do these dreams. And there's someone that could not do it. You know, he could not make them happen. So I need to do it for him. I need to, it has to be kind of a way that, you know, it would live through me, basically. And so, yeah, so that was life before. And then, you know, after that, I went to high school, and in high school, I was starting to bothering more my parents about, hey, now I'm an adult. You know, like, it's like, oh, yeah, I'm 17 years old, mom. I can definitely, you know.
Certainly move to New York. No big deal.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I can move to New York, right? So you guys have the money for that? So actually, we're laughing about that. But that kind of what happened is like at 17, I asked my parents if I could do an English program, which actually was great also for, you know, school. So it was a perfect way to be like, hey.
Like, was it a study abroad type thing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for like, it was really like a summer program. So it's like for 3 weeks. Yeah, it was 3 weeks during summer, during basically, well, high school works differently than the US, but it was before like my last year of high school. So I was asking my mom, like, you know, especially my mom, because my dad was like, I don't know, leaving my daughter of 17 years old going to New York. I don't know about that. But my mom was like, yeah, you need to dream. You need to do your trip. And she's very much like that. So I was like, mom, please, please. That will be my Christmas gift, my birthday gift for like the next 5 years. So I left. I was 17 years old, left for this summer program. And that was my first time in the United States. Arrived in New York, and I always remember that I arrived there and waiting forever in the immigration line, and then get out there and use a payphone to call my parents to tell them.
So now you're dating yourself.
Yeah. No kidding. So I'm like taking the payphone, and I'm like, all right, I need to call my parents. So, all right, call my parents. It's 2 a.m. in France. And my parents, okay, you sure you're okay? You sure you're fine? I'm like, yeah, I'm just waiting for the cab to come pick me up. And I was going to host family, which, you know, my parents were a little bit more reassured about that. But it was all the way to Brooklyn, and I was in Newark, which is like you have to cross the entire city before you get there. But we're on the phone, and they're reassured, and it's okay. But fun fact is, when I came back, and probably month after, I never knew that, but my parents were actually crying and they were so scared because they didn't hear from me because it took so long in the immigration line. I never knew that until like months later when my mom was like, well, we just want to tell you that we're very happy you did this, but our nerves were probably killing us there. And I was like, what? You guys felt so reassured. And I'm like, that's the beauty of parents. Like being able to take so much on yourself like that. I was like, wow.
When you came over here for that first time, how, like, what's the percentage that it matched what you thought New York or America would be like?
Oof.
Because I feel like, you know, we watch Americans watch things in France and Paris, and we're like, you imagine it, and then you talk to people that live in Paris, and you're like, well, certain parts of Paris look like that.
Yeah, certain parts, you know, the one that you can afford. Yeah, and if you watch Emily in Paris, everyone is asking me about that. Like,
everyone lives at the Eiffel Tower.
Yeah, exactly. Everyone lives in, like, there's a French chef that is beautiful, like two floor down, and it has a beautiful restaurant that you never pay for when you get there.
Yeah, how did America fit?
I would say very closely to what I was picturing. The only thing I think that I was a bit of a cultural shock for me was, oh, it's a big city. So it's actually like a subway and it stinks and there is, you know, trash and there is crazy people on the street, which is still the case, by the way, still like that. So I think for me, it was kind of a, you know, there's a part of New York that you don't see, of course, in movies. And, unless you watch, you know, like Law and Order,
Right.
but otherwise, I feel like it was very, I was really much in my mind of the Friends cast and everyone has big apartments and living in Greenwich Village. So it was a little bit of a cultural shock for sure.
Yeah. It's always interesting to me because you talk to a lot of people that have moved to the United States from somewhere else, and there's that American dream, or like you have this picture in your head. Imagine if you had moved to like Kansas. It probably would have been a little different for you.
I have another story for you. I lived for 6 months in Missouri, if you don't know that. It's coming later for the next shift.
So you got your taste of America. You went back. Was it solidified that you definitely needed to come back? Was that in your head like you had to?
Oh, yeah. So when I arrived in New York, 17-year-old, I mean, what do you know at 17? It's not. But when I arrived in New York, the energy, the people, and I met some amazing people. One of my closest friends was my bridesmaids, actually, my wedding. I met her during this trip when we were 17. So, I have such a strong, memory of also New York in this way. And so, the energy of New York, I was in love. I just definitely fell in love. And I was like, okay, I want more. I want a career. I want a life. And people were like, oh, poor you. It's going to be so tough. The visa are impossible. Everyone was telling me that, like, the visa are impossible. You're never going to make it. Making in New York is so tough. Everyone was telling me this. Either it was on the French side or even Americans were like, well, it's going to be really tough. Especially French people living in New York, because we're not known for being the most optimistic people on earth.
Do you think that all those people telling you that it was going to be impossible made you fight and want it more?
Yes.
Are you that type of person?
Yes. I'm like, oh, really? Well, let me show you. So, for sure. Definitely.
How long did it take you to get back? Or what made you come back?
So it took me, I was 17, and then I came back when I was 21 in Missouri, as that was a study, like an exchange program with my university. And I stayed there for 6 months. But that was a really big cultural shock for me.
Oh,
and
I'm sure, yeah.
And I went through what we call the homesick thing that happens to expatriate people, which is like usually 2 or 3 months after you arrive. I went through hard because, you need to have a car. I was like a little bit off campus, and everyone that I was meeting was, people were extremely nice. It's not a problem on that, but the culture was so different that I felt like I was the outsider. And thank God that we had other people coming from other countries, and we were a lot of internationals, because if I was, the only French person, it would have been really, really tough. But outside of that, it was great. It was fun. It was just this time, that adaptation, that was hard. But then also told me one thing. It was like, oh, Mathilde, you're ready. You've done your cultural shock. So you're ready to go to New York after that.
Like a soft landing.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, oh, we're starting nice now, or, you're going to get your cultural shock here, and now you can go to New York. So that was when I was 21. And so during that time, I flew to New York, and I went there, and I did interviewed for the internship that I was looking for. And I was obsessed by this internship. The moment I heard about it, which was even before I left for Missouri, I knew it from like the school I was in, someone that did it, and I was like, okay, I want in. It was a company that is actually named Sud de France, and it's all about South of France, French company based in New York. And they were helping companies to actually move their services and products to the United States. So for me, it was awesome, because it means working with wine, working with food, working with the French, all the things that I love about France in the United States. So perfect job. So I was definitely fighting for it.
It doesn't hurt that you knew French and English in that sense, right?
Exactly. And, it was about the South of France, and my family is from the South of France. A big part of my family is from South France. So I also knew this culture, because trust me, France is very different in different parts of
France.
Just like America. So you had to know also kind of like some of the subtleties, of the culture and things like that. So that was when I was 21. And so I fought for this internship in a way that you have no idea. Like, I was writing emails to the director in France. Like, every week I would write an email. I would try to call. I would try to call again. And then, but the New York office already wanted me. So it was awesome. The problem was in France, where they were a little bit blocking because they had to sponsor me a visa. And we knew that was the hard part for a lot of companies. So that was where, you know, I was like really putting all my efforts in it. And so when I went back after Missouri in France for a summer job, I was supposed to have this internship starting in September. No answer until July, where finally someone answered like, oh, you have to come to see us in the south of France to show us that you're actually motivated. Like, do the interview really face to face. I'm like, okay, no problem. I will do it. I'll be right there. And that interview was actually an interesting interview because the director was really trying to make me feel a little bit, you know, like unsure. You know, he was really trying to test me. And I was there, big smile, just came back from the US. So, you know, I was very sure and I was just going for it. I was really showing how motivated I was. And at the end of the interview, and that still makes me laugh. He looked at me, he's like, oh, but you're the girl that called us like 100 times and sent us a bunch of emails. That's you. Like, he looked at my name, you know, when he said that. And I'm like, yes, it's me. And he's like, well, good thing. That's definitely going to pay for you. And that's all. And that's how I knew I got the internship. And yeah. And so a few months later, that was time for me to go to New York as an intern. So that was my real first time discovery, which was, it was an unpaid internship, by the way. So.
Oh, wow. Welcome to America.
Welcome to America. So I had to have some resources. I had to work on weekends. I had to work in wine stores doing wine tasting because I was learning about wine and teaching wine. I had to work on weekends in wine stores all over New York, and they were paying me with a gift card because I could not be paid.
Oh, right. Because they didn't want to sponsor you. Right.
Yeah. So it was such, I remember all these gift cards that I would have that would pay me for my food, that would pay me, you know, for transportation and stuff. So it was an interesting time.
I'm wondering, were you this much of a go-getter like throughout school? Did it start when your friend died? Was it from birth? You know, like, have you always been like, if I want it, I'm going to make it happen?
Yeah, I would say so, because my parents always, you know, they still tell me this right now, you know, when I call them and I'm like, oh my God, I just left my job and we're in trouble, the world, what are we doing? And my dad's like, oh my God, you know exactly what you're doing. So I feel like, so I just feel like I was probably like this. I have a hard time to remember exactly when I was a kid, but I remember usually being kind of the leader, you know, like I was always like the one starting new things and new classes and new communities. You know, I was always kind of we were calling me when I was doing, acting when I was a teenager, and I was remember my teacher saying, oh, you're just like the engine, you know, that is like, you know, taking everyone with you. And I was like, really? I never saw myself like that. So yeah, I think it was like this for a long time. And the fact, you know, that I saw things happening when I was doing that got me into, you know, this mood of.
No, I think it's interesting too, coming from like, I grew up, my parents divorced young when I was young, and then when my mom died. And so I've kind of always been in a family that was somewhat fractured, and there was a lot of fear in trying new things. But from what you say, like with your parents, it was almost like you had permission to try things. And if it didn't work out, so what, right? Like you were able to, and that probably pushes someone. Mm-hmm. Like you said, you saw things, like you tried it, nothing broke. Things were progressing, and then you were able to do it. Because I feel like as an American in my situation growing up, I don't know that, like, I would have dreamed to go to a different country, but I don't even know if I knew there were other countries out there. You know, like, I feel like I was very sheltered. Right. I was very sheltered, and I didn't, I'm not sure that it was like, I felt like Americans had a very prescribed upbringing, right?
Yeah.
So many Americans, I feel like we were conditioned to go to high school, then you go to college, then you get a job, then you create a family, and then you just work till you die, right? Is that different in France?
Oh, yeah, very different. And actually, we talk about this often with some of my friends. you know, because I, you know, I was hanging out with a lot of French people in New York, and especially in my office too. And we talked about this recently, actually, because we just realized how much when you're a teenager in France, you already travel. Because France is a small country, Europe is all around you. Especially now with the Schengen area, you can just travel without, you know, a passport between, you know, France and Italy. It's just basically the same area. So I feel like we've been taught very early that you can go anywhere. There's no problem. And that's the biggest difference with the US, actually, is like we definitely work to have a nice life. And I feel like in the US is like you have a life to work. And it's such a different impact. And I see it being married with an American, the way is, you know, and now, I mean, it changed a lot, but I've seen it by the way he was talking about his work and his career and how much it was impacting, you know, his identity and stuff like this. And I was like, wow, I never thought like this at all about myself. And I've never seen any of my friends or my family thinking like this either. So it's, so I feel like that's probably the biggest gap. And so I feel like I grew up in, and in a family too, but in a mentality where you can do whatever you want. We also a country that has, you know, a lot of help towards people. So like, for example, if you want to start creating a company and you leave your job, you'll have some unemployment help that's going to be quite important compared to the US. So whatever, people will judge this good or not, depending, you know, what you think of this. But at least I feel like for a lot of people, changing life and actually do something that has more purpose, you actually have a better chance to do it, I think, in a country like France, because we give you a little bit more support. That's the way I've seen it, at least.
And you know what? And forgive me for this. I know we've gone back and forth and we've talked about, you know, the show is about moments that have changed lives forever. Mm-hmm. And I ask, you know this, I ask my guests to just fill out something really short, just kind of give me an idea of what you think your life shift is. And so as we're talking, I'm wondering if your life shift is actually when your mom said yes to that 17-year-old mm-hmm. version of you to come over here.
That's so interesting, yeah.
Because I feel like, I mean, sure, the 11-year-old version of you, you were 11, right? Like, yeah. Who believes an 11-year-old? But a 17 is an almost fully formed person, right? That has legitimate thoughts. Yeah. I mean, maybe not the best ones, but I'm wondering if me saying that out loud, does that mm-hmm. trigger, does that make you think that like that was the, like if she had said no.
I know.
Is there something different?
It's so interesting. I never thought of that. But when you say it, it makes so much sense. I think you're right. That could have been the shift because, yeah, if she would have said no, I don't think, I mean, I probably would have tried differently because I know
right.
myself.
You would have had to wait till you were
yeah, I would
older,
have, but
right?
I would have waited. And I maybe would not have had the experience I had at 17 that I needed to actually push me even more and, you know, like really forward and give me give me basically the confidence to actually keep going. Yeah. That's, I love it. It's so cool. I love thinking of it this way.
Yeah. It's interesting because I think we all, I mean, as humans, unless we're really sheltered, we all have like moments that could have gone one way or another, right? That's every day. We make decisions that can change. And sure, you know, and we're about to go into you moving to New York and a bunch of things happened. But part of me in this early part of the conversation really feels drawn to that moment of permission to like send a 17-year-old over to a foreign country to get into immigration lines and cry your eyes out while like, oh, is my daughter alive? Yes. There are yeah. no cell phones, you know, like, mm-hmm. so... I'm wondering, you know, and so let's put that in yeah. our brains and think about it. But tell us about like when you got here. I know on that form that we talked about, you moved to the States, but then a couple things happened in a row that kind of.
Exactly. So yeah, so I moved this time as an intern. That was a whole experience. I stayed for a year and it was, I mean, it was amazing. But after this experience of 1 year as an unpaid intern, I still wanted to go back to New York. But this time I wanted to have a job. And so I went back to France because I had to finish my master degree, international marketing. And then I also, wanted to spend a bit of time in France. And to be honest, like the shock of, we talk about often about expatriates, but we rarely talk about impatriates, which is basically people coming back to their country after they've been expatriate. And it's tough. It's really, really tough. And so after I came back from New York, after this whole year of internship, where basically I was, I had like the best year of my life, at this point, I was like, okay, I need to go back. It's amazing. I need to go back. I need to find a way to find a work there this time. And so I was going through my master, and actually the company that was having me as an intern got a job opening for a project manager role, which is exactly what I wanted to do. And so they kept me in mind because they love working with me. And actually the director at that time is now a really close friend of mine. So, they're all been really good friends because, we've been through so much all together. So she was, contacting me like, okay, do you want to come back? But I had to finish my master in order to get a visa, because the way you get a visa, you have to show you have a certain level of education. And so I had to wait, but they were waiting for me, which is crazy. They left the job opening open and waited for me. And I could not, I still can't believe about this. And she still tells me that.
It's because you emailed them so many times.
I know. That's exactly that. They're like, okay, we really need to give her a job. Probably
she won't stop.
It's like, do you look desperate or you look determined? I think I was desperate.
No, I think you were determined. No. And they saw that.
No, I was
that.
Determined.
Let's not negate the fact that you were here for a year working as an unpaid internship.
Exactly.
That says a lot. And that's another thing that I think is different between maybe some American culture and someone like yourself. So let's give you a pat on the back. And I think that's probably why they held that job open for you.
No, they did. And also, we love working all together. We're a great team. And like I said, we were at that time, we were already becoming friends, And so she was, okay, we'll wait for you. So this is, how close we're getting to the departure. I was with someone at that time, ex-boyfriend I've been for, over 6 years, and we were supposed to go together. And that's the whole idea. And so he's figured out this whole thing. He was trying to ask a transfer from his company. But things were not really going well. And so it was really tough because, 6 years with someone, we were kind of engaged. It was not really engagement the way the US would say it, but it's more like what we call like a domestic partnership in France. We call that the PEX. And it's basically when you sign and you say you're actually in a relationship with this person, it's quite serious. So 6 years of that, and then we're going to New York together. And so we arrive in New York, and that's where things started to go south. But that was the biggest, shift for me, because I arrived, I'm here, I have a job, I have a paycheck, and I have a visa, and I am back. And it's so crazy because it feels like I'm back to my old life, except this time I have money. And this time my ex-boyfriend, that time boyfriend is with me. So we're staying somewhere in the summer, and I start to feel like things are really not going well. I point that he's not even talking to me. So that's a really hard breakup that I'm going through, because I think he was just dealing with things, and I, I was kind of taking everything on me. And the hard part was that I was starting this new job. So I also wanted to prove myself, work hard. That was the summer. So all my coworkers were kind of like traveling and, have vacation, and I'm kind of alone at the office. And so that's where the breakup happens. And we had an apartment together that was ending. And the day we broke up, I have nowhere to go. So I'm with my two suitcases, dropping them at my office. I was like, maybe I can sleep at the office. But lucky for me, one of my closest friends was actually arriving in New York at that time for an intern, for a job, sorry. And so she was like looking for a place, and she had this like extremely small studio, you know, like in the Upper West Side, like a small bed. And she's like, you can come sleep with me. So it's like me with my two huge suitcases coming in this very small place and sharing the same bed with her for a month, not knowing where I'm going to leave. Definitely, I mean, my paycheck was really small still because, you know, I just started. And so it was very scary. I was really in this moment where I was like, okay, this is why I left France and I left everything that I had, because that's what I did. You know, I left my family, my friends. I didn't know when I was going to see them. It was really a scary time. So I was really trying to like picture like, okay, you're in New York. That's great. That was your dream. Remember, remember, Mitchell, this is what you wanted. So this is where the shift is happening at that moment. A moment is like, what am I doing? Because I was literally crying every day. My heart was broken, but at the same time, it was the best place I wanted to be. But I felt like, you know, things were just going too fast. And I remember calling my dad, and my dad said, you want to come home? And at that point, I said, no, I can't. I can't go home. And my dad's like, okay, good. Tell us when you need. Tell us what you need. Tell us the support. And so I was calling my parents every day, calling my brother. My brother was like enraged. He was like, what? It brought you here. And then you just leave you like this in the street. I mean, you know, the whole, you know, rage. And I was like, that's fine. And I was not even mad because it was like, I prefer that than being in a relationship that makes no sense. So, but it was more like the aspect of what am I doing? I'm basically by myself in a city like New York. And so crazy thing happened. And so we're, you know, living with my friend and things, you know, start picking up and I'm trying to find a place and, you know, I'm trying to see the positive sides of things. But the crazy thing is a few weeks later, I meet someone. You know, at that time, I'm like, there's no freaking way I'm going another relationship right now. It's like, you can forget about that. I don't want to hear talking about men. It's like, I don't want that. But yeah, so, you know, life happens this way. You know, it's like, hey, that's the worst moment ever, but take it. So I actually meet my now husband and, you know, with, you know, friends. And I mean, I can't tell the story as good as he says it, but he basically said that we were going to a Labor Day weekend and he was in a hot tub with his friends. We were at Common Friends. That's how we met. And this car arrives with four French girls coming out of the car. It was the most stereotypical job. Like it was one working the wine, one was working in fashion, one was a professional dancer, one was selling like, you know, truffle to high-end restaurants. And he's like, they're just pour themselves out of the car. We're all dressed up, which for us was just like, you know, we're going to weekend. So we're all having those nice dresses, hats, and, you know, and he sees us arrive. He's like, I understood right now that my life was about to change. So, yeah, so that was a big shift because after that, even if I didn't want to be in a relationship, we still, you know, hang out together and we start, and actually, you know, we met more people and I think it, you know, whatever we can think of, even if we don't want to be in a relationship, you have this new person in your life that brings you the support because he was also going through a breakup. So you know, it was an interesting time.
You were building community.
Mm-hmm, exactly. We're building our own little group of friends. Oh my God, group of friends. So it was fun. And we're traveling a lot every weekend and we're doing a lot of stuff. And you know, we end up falling in love. So that was definitely a story.
So what was the time period from when you landed in New York that time and when you met your now husband?
About 3 months, I think, or 2 months and a half. Yeah, something like that.
So it gave you the time to freak out. And then it was like, surprise, this is the reason you should stay.
Exactly. And that's the reason that the whole relationship you had before had to like end up like right now, you know, because you need to realize that there's something else. There's someone else. Yeah, for sure.
What kept you from just running back home?
To be honest, you know, I it's going to be really hard to answer because I really felt like it was something deep inside me. Like it was like it was something in my heart that was telling me, you know, like you stay, you know, like this is home. This is home now. And it's still crazy for me when I think about that time and I tried, you know, to the emotion is still here. I can feel it. It was like, it was so like, no, there's no way I'm going anywhere. This is where I belong now. that was kind of the feeling.
Part of the reason I asked is early on, you were talking about your friend that passed when you guys were 15, and you said like there was part of you still now,
yeah,
that you do things in honor of your friend. Do you think any of that was sitting,
yes,
there? Like you had talked about it and you now have the opportunity that he will never have.
Yeah.
And so it's like, I can't give up yet.
So part of that story actually is that during that summer where everything was really, you know, kind of, you know, crumbling in front of me, I remember praying a lot at that time, you know, and, you know, I was just like, kind of like talking to my guys up there. And I was like, come on, guys, I need a little bit of help here. But I was also talking to him and I was telling him like, man, like, I feel so shitty. I feel exactly the same that when I went through the same grief with you. Like, what the hell is that, you know? And so I think the crazy part is that I know deep inside of me, I know that the day I met my husband, Evan, which was September 2nd, by the way, that day when I met him, I knew something was pushing us to meet. Like, I felt this. I knew it. I knew that something was happening, and the way it was happening, it was just planned this way. And so, you know, whatever we believe in anything, for me, I believe that he was there and he definitely made this happen. That's definitely what I think.
Okay. So I'm going to go off on a tangent again and think that, you know, early on you talked about kind of this idyllic fanatic obsession with America, right? You had this dream picture, mm-hmm, in your head that you were going to be a New Yorker and you were going to be Carrie Bradshaw or whoever you were going to be. I wonder if the universe was like, let's erase that so that you can create your own.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're right. I think, and I definitely think that now because of, you know, I've been in New York for 6 years. And I've seen that my life was never like anyone else because you're basically a French person living in the United States and meeting my husband, American from South Carolina, you know? And so I was like, wow, this is such a unique story that I could not even have, you know, invented myself. And so you're right. I think that's definitely true.
And the reason I say that is because I think sometimes we have this like picture of what the ideal or perfect situation is, especially of New York or something, or like, mm-hmm, LA or Hollywood. And some people might have that picture and then they meet Evan, but, mm-hmm, he doesn't fit the picture, right? And so therefore you dismiss. So I'm wondering like if the universe was just like messing with you, like, look, let's get rid of this friends, you know,
yeah,
situation in your head so that you can be welcoming of this new community that you never really pictured in your head.
Well, you know, I think one thing that I realize, and it's kind of close to what you're saying right now, is that I think my whole life, I mean, I believe in past lives. So first, you know, for a long time, I didn't even believe it. But very recently, I started to believe in that. And I really wonder, oh, my God, maybe I had a past life somewhere that I had to go back to, you know. But part of me also, when, you know, was thinking, well, you know, I was growing up in this image we were giving me. It's like, you know, we were showing you an image that you really, really want to make sure you're going to be determined to get there. But the whole plan was actually to make sure I meet the person I was supposed to meet. That's kind of how I felt it. You know, it's kind of how I felt way after, you know, when we started to be together. And I was like, that's crazy. You know, like we gave me this image to make sure I was like, you know, going towards this. But it's because there was something else that was like waiting for me. And you know, if you're telling you, oh, you have to go to U.S. to meet your husband, I don't know if, you know, at 17, you really care. But if you tell you, like, you can live a dream life, like, exactly like you see on screen, go for it. And then you're like, okay, I'm going, you know, and then it's like, all right, now we have a whole new plan for you.
Well, it's kind of like shopping, right? Like, you walk down a street, you see something in the window, and you're like, oh, cool, I'm going to go in there. But then deeper into the store, you find what you really want.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's cool. I think, you know, it's unfortunate that you had those moments, but they probably made you appreciate,
oh yeah,
everything that you grew from that point on a lot more, right?
Oh yeah, for sure. And you know, I told this to a friend recently that got her heart broken, and I said, you know, actually, for me, one of the best time of my life was to be heartbroken, not because of the suffering, because that sucks, but because of what comes after. And when you love again, and when you have hope again, and when you think about all those beautiful things, and then you rediscover someone else with a new eye, then you realize, like, wow, actually, this is awesome. Like, I've been so bad the last few weeks, but now I feel so good. And it's like this, you know, gap of sensation and feelings is, you know, is really what actually, and that's why I believe like sadness, fear, suffering, unfortunately have, you know, their place, you know, in our lives. It's because we need them to compare what the beautiful things it's coming after. So, yeah.
I agree. And a lot of the people that I talk to, especially those people that have their episodes that are more centered around something more tragic, most of the people, including myself, are grateful for that tragedy.
For sure.
Which is very weird to say, right? Like, I'm not grateful that my mother died, but this version of me is grateful for the experience that I've had because of it.
Exactly.
So I agree. You know, that's like these people that live up here all the time, it's probably not that pleasant, right? Like to us, it might look great. Like they're always happy, but maybe they're not because they're not experiencing those highs and lows. And I know that we, you know, when we originally started talking about this, there were like multiple points and, you know, in interest of time, we're not gonna be able to get all to those and your life is fascinating. But I think what's most fascinating to me, and I'm going to keep going back to it, is the idea that you were free to create your own destiny. And I don't think that a lot of people listening to the Life Shift podcast grew up that way.
No, yeah. No, I agree.
Mm-hmm. And I think that because your parents or your upbringing or your country put that in you and said, hey, whatever you want to do, go for it. We support you.
But it's funny because that's kind of what I'm doing now for people. You know,
right.
It's like
you're bringing France to them.
Yeah, I love them. Yeah, I try to.
You're bringing your upbringing to them. Yeah. Why don't you tell us? I mean, so here we'll fast forward a little bit. You got really successful in your job in New York, and then you were like, you know what? I want to create more of my own life, right? So what do you do now? You left that corporate America to do what?
Left. Yeah, it was a tough decision, but I left it because I wanted to create my own business. And part of me was, you know, I was doing a job where I was helping people to come to the US. I was helping them to, you know, sell their products, sell their wine, their foods. It was fun. But I always felt like I was not helping enough. You know, it always felt like I was, I was helping on administrative things. I was helping on networking, but it was not enough. I felt like I wanted to help more. So part of me was like, okay, I should probably try to just build my thing. And you have to think that at that time, that 2020, COVID happened and I was, you know, applying for a green card because I could not work next to my other work. I was not authorized. I could only work at my company. My visa was only attached to my company. But because we were married, I started to have the green card. And so the green card kind of opened up, you know, new doors. It's like, okay, now it's kind of like, you know, the perfect door to like, you know, whatever you want, because you can do whatever you want with a green card. So I started to think, okay, let's start working, like start thinking about ideas and how I can do this. I started to work online for companies doing project management, because this is, you know, kind of what I was doing also is like project management. I was helping, you know, any CEOs or companies online to take decisions. I was advising them. And I thought, okay, that's fun, but I want to go deeper. Like, I really want to help people on a certain level. And it took me a little bit of time. It's really this year, beginning of this year, that I started to help people more on coaching and really, really focus on what is your dream life? What is your dream plan? What are the things that you want to create? So if it's a dream business, we can do that. But if it's actually a lifestyle, which I'm going right now towards to, what can we do to make this happen? So I have a few clients that I started to work like that. And I love the way, you know, we were working together, the program. And I was seeing the pain points, you know, I was saying like the problems that a lot of people are having. So one of them was allowing themselves to dream, allowing themselves to be able to do that. A lot of the people that I've been talking to, not necessarily clients, you know, even people I met on LinkedIn are like, oh, I don't know. I never really thought about it.
Yeah. I mean, I honestly think that Americans just like we weren't taught to dream.
Yeah, exactly. But it's kind of what my husband
outside of
was
a box.
Telling me too.
Right?
Like, yeah, yeah, exactly. It's like, oh, you can dream for your best career and the best 401k. Your best 401k option is what you can dream.
I mean, honestly, it's true. I feel like our dreams were like, here's the top shelf. You can choose one of these 20 things. Yeah. And there you go. That's your realistic dream life. Go.
Yeah, no, exactly. I think, and you know, I talked about this recently. I was like, what if we were actually teaching kids at school what is about, like, you know, a dream plan? And it's not just telling kids, like, what kind of job you want, because that's the kind of question we ask you when you're a kid. Oh, what kind of job do you want to do? But we don't ask you, what do you want to be, you know, or what are the things you want to do? What are the things you want to explore? And I think it would be so much worth, you know, for our next generation to actually ask them, like, what do you want to do? Like, not as a job, like just in life. And you see, if you ask kids, they will give you the most beautiful and genuine answers because
I want to be
that's
a dragon.
What a kid is. Yeah, exactly. I want to be a dragon. Yeah, yeah, exactly. But it could be anything, you know, like, because they don't have the limit. The limit is coming later on. It's coming later on in life because, well, you know, there's a problem of security where people feel like, oh, I need the money for the security, especially in a country like the US, where it's really definitely like the strong message we're sending to people. And I'm trying to teach people saying like, hello, security does not exist. It's totally false. The only security that exists is you. So it's your mind, you know, it's you, it's your heart, it's your reason. So by starting to teach, you know, these, you know, different pain points to people, like showing them why they exist, and people start understanding like, oh, wow, you're doing it. So I probably can do it. And some other people have been doing it. So yeah, you're right. Maybe I can. And that's really where I want to work in, is like inspire people to do more of what we're going to do, which is for the, you know, leaving your job, create your business, travel the world, if it's your thing. But for some other people, I just talked to someone recently on LinkedIn, it's like, oh, me, we're going to leave our job, buy a farm and become self-sufficient. And we're going to have this beautiful, you know, farm world welcome people to, I thought that was amazing, but she was already dreaming when she was saying that. And I was like, okay, so that's great, because you're actually allowing yourself right now to think way bigger than just the routine and the career job.
That makes me think of episode 16. I believe it's episode 16. My friend Jenna, her and her husband left a corporate America job that, like, everyone would be like, why are you leaving? Look at that salary. They sold everything. They bought an RV and they started traveling the country. Awesome. To different farms. And now she says, like, the next best step is kind of their thing of, or dream a little dream. And each thing got them to their dream farm, creating sustainable food for the entire community. And, you know, and so, but it took like what you and Evan are doing, like leaving corporate America to find the things that are in your passions to, I guess, provide quote unquote security of funding, right? In order to fund whatever you want to do. But you mentioned it just in passing that you guys are just about to leave to whatever destination that you want to. Is that worldwide? Is that countrywide? Where are you going next?
So that's the next, you know, shift. And especially for Evan. And so our next destination is France. So we're going to spend a bit of time. So for me, it's, you know, it's nice. It's been a long time that I haven't spent that much time in France. So it's going to be a bit weird, but excited to spend time with the friends and family I haven't seen in a while. And for Evan, that speaks very good French. Like, he's, you know, close to fluent now. It's, you know, practicing and be there, because I really, he wanted this experience of being in another country for such a long time. And I told him, like, well, now you speak, you know, language perfectly, you understand the culture, you understand even the bad private jokes between French, like, you, people, you're like, you're good, you know, so you can do it. So I think that's definitely the next step. And then after that, it's going to be mostly Southeast Asia. I have my brother that lives in Sydney. So we're going to, you know, enjoy, you know, the fact that he's there for doing Bali, Sydney, Vietnam, Thailand, back to Thailand. for sure.
That's amazing.
Yeah, Cambodia. Cambodia is on our list. I always wanted to go. And the idea is also to keep working, of course. Like I would really want to keep building my business, and Evan is building his career as a voice actor and maybe other things, because he's still discovering what he wants to do. But part of it, is we want to also do charity work. So the idea was also we go to these places and try to see how we can build something. And it could be either be part of charity that already exists or build something, or, you know, use also the community that we have in the US to maybe come and help to something. So we're still thinking of this, and I think we want to travel to see what are the needs and where we can be helpful. I always wanted to do charity work for like such a long time. And I remember, like, I was dreaming when I was in corporate job a few years back. I was dreaming on my computer, looking at these charities that needed help. I was sending them message, basically saying, I'm coming soon. But so I really want this to happen. And then, you know, we know.
It will happen.
Yeah, it will happen.
I mean,
sure.
You've made all these things happen now. Okay, so in the interest of time, I like to ask a question to all my guests, but yours is going to be a little bit different. So my thought is, what if you went back to that 17-year-old version of you that was like, I want to go do an English 3-week thing, and you told her, hey, you and your husband in 2022 are about to travel the world living your dream life. How do you think that conversation would go?
I think she would be pretty excited, because she already wanted to travel the world at that time. New York was definitely like the first part. I think she would be excited. And you know what? I think part of her would not be surprised actually about the American husband, because I always felt when I was growing up that I was almost an outsider of my own country, which is kind of weird to say that, because I always, so like I said, like it's great to see both worlds, but I always felt very close to American mentality for a lot of things, which is the fact that you guys are always very positive. You guys have such a strong, it's true. You, oh my God, go to France and then you'll understand what it means.
Comparatively.
Oh yes. No, but you guys love to celebrate, you know, there's this strong feeling of, you know, celebrating, having fun. The problem was that the other part of mentality of the US is that there is this corporate and kind of like you have to be inside the box. But the one thing that even if you're inside that box, and like even if you're like, you know, in this world that we're kind of forcing you to be in there, you guys still try to like see the, you know, the best part, you know. Like I was so surprised when I arrived in the US that I was talking with my host family for the first time when I was 17. They're, oh yeah, I have these health issues. Like she had a bunch of problems. And she kept saying, but you know, we're so happy. And I was like, I never heard anyone in my life at that time, you know,
really?
Other than my parents, said they were happy. Because in France, you don't talk about your emotion in a way, like you don't talk about like happy, because French people love to complain. We love that. We love to complain. There's always better somewhere. And it's incredible. And that drives me insane when I go back to France, you know? So I was seeing all these parts, you know, of the American mentality that I was attracted to. So when I was 17, if we were telling me this, I would be like, cool, because you guys are pretty cool people. I mean, there's probably things we don't agree on, but you know, otherwise it's, if I had to choose another country that, you know, I'll become a citizen one day of the US, it's like, yeah, I like that. I like to choose this one.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. You know what surprised me too? It's almost like your parents were an anomaly as well, because they were like this positive reinforcement in a world of complaints. But you know, stuck out in that whole conversation earlier. You said, you know, you spent the year doing the unpaid internship here in New York, and then you went back to France, and you kind of felt like it felt weird, right? It felt like you were not home.
Mm-hmm. No.
In a way, do you think that when you go there next?
Yes, and I'm going to tell you something. It's not sad. It's going to sound sad, but it's not, okay? But when you become an expatriate in life, I don't think there is really a place that is home anymore. It's a curse at the same time that is, you know, a blessing, because we have the chance that we've been living everywhere. And I've talked about this with expatriate that thinks exactly the same thing, is that you can go to different places and you can find a part of home. You know, if I go back to France, I definitely got to find a part of home because my parents are there, because my friends, because memories, you know, places I've been. But part of me feels also that I don't really belong there anymore. But it's the same thing when I'm here. It's the same thing when I'm in the US. It's, you know, there's a part of me that feels like it's a bit like home, but at the same time, not really. So I think for me now is I'm not trying to, you know, figure out where is home. I mean, New York is the close one for sure, because that's where, you know, kind of everything started. So definitely where I would feel the most home. But, you know, there's still things in New York that I, you know, don't agree with. So, but it's to find the people that makes you feel home. And so the one reason, you know, when we started to think about, you know, traveling the world with Evan, I was not scared at all. And I'm still not scared. I'm a bit anxious and, you know, like because of the more the logistic part of everything, but I'm not scared at all. It's because he's my home, you know? And we kind of said that to each other. It's like, whatever we're going in the world, and that's what I want him to experience, because I want him to feel that way, that he can understand that feeling. And so, you know, it's pretty beautiful at the end. It's just, it's also you're always outside of your comfort zone. So I guess that's probably why you never feel like you're home, but it's exciting. It's definitely an exciting.
No, I mean, I think your story is inspiring for a lot of people, but I think specifically for Americans, especially those in my generation of, you know, like you can dream big and you can actually make those dreams come true, and your dreams do not have to fit in the ideas of other people, right? It's like your dreams are yours. Mm-hmm. So own them, live them, do what you need to do to make them happen.
You said it. Yep, exactly.
Well, I appreciate that you gave me this time to hear your story and kind of tell you what your life shift was, even though it may be multiple areas. I just, mm-hmm. I'm so honored that people come on here and trust me enough to share their story with everyone. This was the first episode of season 2 of the Life Shift podcast, and I have so many more recordings coming up. So just stay tuned every week. If you're enjoying the show, I would appreciate a rating of 5 stars and a review, which Mathilde did for me. So thankful for doing that as well. And that was before we even knew you were going to be on the show. So I appreciate that.
I love that show. Now, it's great. I mean, you're doing a great job as a host, but also it's a beautiful show to get inspired. And, you know, that's why when you invited me to be on, I was like, whoa, that's awesome. I feel so flattered. So thank you.
You are most welcome. And, you know, I told you this earlier. My mission for the show is that each episode finds the ears that needed to hear that story at the moment. So that's true. One person here's something that like sparks something or makes them feel less alone or provides some kind of community, then we win.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. You know, 100% agree.
There might be someone listening to your episode right now that is like, you know what? I've always wanted to do XYZ. I'm going to do it.
I'm going to do it. Yep. Exactly. Yeah. And that's exactly why I've been on LinkedIn so much lately, is like, I realized that by writing my stories and inspiration, people come to me and like, wow, you said that and it resonated. And now I want to do this. How can I do it? You know, and I'm happy to, you know, take some of my time to give some tips and direction and pointers and of course to coach if someone wants me to, but it's so beautiful to see that we can inspire by just being there, you know, and tell stories. So Yeah, definitely grateful.
Yeah, it's nice to be yourself and be able to inspire others without like trying, right? Just keep doing what you're doing, my friend. I'm so glad that we got to learn more about you. And
thank you.
Thank you.
It was fun.
For more information, please visit www.thelifeshiftpodcast.com.